Welcome to, well, welcome back to the Clemson Tubcast. Man, is it January 17th? It's been 15 days since the last podcast with Tom Rinaldi. I feel really bad. Did not plan for there to be that lengthy of a hiatus, but as you might have heard, Clemson football team, I took a little trip out to Santa Clara and had a little exhibition at Levi's Stadium that was kind of a big deal that we had to to write about going in and going out. And also had another unanticipated project that I had to tackle in the spare time, in addition to the normal punching of the time clock with TigerIllustrated.com. Be prepared to share more, I guess, very soon about this project, but that has consumed a bunch of time over the last week, and so that explains why it's been so long. I really appreciate all the folks asking on the TigerIllustrated.com message board and also Twitter when the podcast is coming back. So always nice to know there's some demand out there to hear my crazy behind talking about stuff. Title sponsor of the Clemson Dubcast, Parham Smith and Archenhold Law Firm in Greenville. Very happy to have them aboard. Couldn't do it without them. Blake Smith and Brooke Archenhold, both Clemson grads, both huge fans. Forte of their firm is medical negligence. They represent patients and their family members in medical negligence actions. They also handle all sorts of other complex personal injury litigation. I can vouch for them. About 10 years ago, a family member had a pretty serious medical situation with one of the local hospitals. Went to Blake Smith, and he very quickly and authoritatively gave us some great advice, and we were very thankful for that. Parham Smith and Archenhold offers free consultations. Give them a call, 864-990-4581, or parhamlaw.com. Business owners out there, if you own a business that accepts credit cards, you need to listen up. Tandem Payment, based right here in the upstate, run by Clemson folks, is changing the face of payment processing, quickly becoming the most cost-effective solution for all small businesses. Tandem's program saves you up to 90% on processing charges and gives your customers what they love most, choices. This is not some crazy introductory offer. Tandem's technology allows business owners to offset their credit card processing costs by applying a small customer service charge to each sale they make. If you want to know more, visit TandemPayment.com today. Former Tiger Hot Rod McDowell works over there at Tandem Payment. They handle all their business and customer service face to face. So give them a call, 864-672-1570, if you're tired of spending an arm and a leg on all those credit card processing fees. Okay, we got our first repeat guest to the podcast, Andy Staples of Sports Illustrated. Just does a fantastic job, always has. Really has a good feel for the foundations of this now dynasty that Dabo Swinney has. Andy wrote about it way back when, has continued following it, has continued developing relationships and zeroing in on a lot of the key developments that have taken place to make this such an incredible run. Andy came to Clemson a couple of weeks ago to gather material on a cover story, a possible cover story at that time, if Clemson won. And then hours after the game ended in Santa Clara, it was Andy and I and another guy, Max Olson, standing there waiting on Dabo to come out of the locker room long after it was all over, just to get a little more detail. So I thought it would be really cool to get Andy's thoughts on Clemson's program, but also sort of the mechanics of how a cover story on Clemson football, a team that just won the national championship, comes together There's a lot of work that goes into it, a lot of thought and a lot of stress. And as you'll hear, a lot of just sort of waiting around and hanging out to see what you'll see, to see if you see something special unfold in front of you. All right, so here we go. Our conversation with Andy Staples. Enjoy. Andy Staples joining us, our first repeat guest of the Clemson Dubcast. Congratulations.
I'm honored. Wow. Or maybe I'm available. I don't know. It's one of the two.
You have a special Cotton Bowl backpack coming to you as a gift.
Awesome. I did not cover the Cotton Bowl, so I was not offered a Cotton Bowl backpack at first.
Better than a Florida State turnover backpack, I guess. But
oh yeah, that is definitely not my style. That particular backpack.
So Andy, wow! I guess is all I can say. The game is 10 days old, but I don't think it will ever be too late to rehash what went down in Santa Clara or wherever the heck they were, as Dabo Swinney said after the game.
It didn't matter where they were. They could have played that game on the moon and it would still be probably the same reaction. Like that happened. Wow. That happened.
So you and I, when you came to Clemson to gather material, a few days, I guess the week before the game, your take, and I'm pretty sure I'm getting this right, you're like, this is a coin flip. And I was more pessimistic about Clemson's chances than you were for two reasons. My lack of confidence that they would be able to keep Trevor Lawrence upright, and his, as great as he is and was, he was not the Deshaun Watson Houdini type in the pocket who could escape and make things happen. And then on the other side, Clemson's matchups, between the Clemson safeties and Alabama's wealth of ridiculous talent that they could put inside. And so totally wrong on my count.
We both got the Clemson offensive line thing wrong. They were phenomenal. And that was the part I was thinking where Alabama would have the advantage is they would be able to get pressure on Trevor Lawrence because the line wouldn't hold up. And it did more than hold up. It dominated.
It's interesting after the game, you know, Clemson 2 years ago when they won it, it was so surreal and fresh and new and even surprising in a way just because of how they did it. Whereas this time they were kind of salty in the aftermath. Yeah. And is that the biggest difference in your mind as well?
Yeah, because, I mean, I think in both cases, the teams were fairly evenly matched physically. And that's just a testament to the recruiting at Clemson because they already, by 2016, had pulled even with Alabama. Nobody else has really been able to do that. You know, Ohio State had its moment there in 2014 and actually probably had the most physically superior team in 2015, but they couldn't get the playoff because they lost to Michigan State. But there haven't been those teams that could recruit at the same level. And Clemson got there and then stayed there. And I think that made all the difference. And, you know, it was interesting. It's kind of instructive because you have that Sugar Bowl between the two national title games that Clemson won where Alabama just crushed Clemson. And you kind of saw exactly what they needed. What would be the difference? The difference would be a quarterback who could get rid of the ball quickly and accurately, and receivers who could win one-on-one matchups on the outside. You know, they had T. Higgins, but he had a hurt ankle, and he was still kind of growing into his body. But they didn't have the Mike Williams type. They didn't have, you know, Jordan Leggett was a tight end, but he created mismatches that they exploited in that national title game that they won in after the 16 season. So they didn't have that. They needed that. And you saw this year, they went out and got that.
But the thing is, you still have to protect the quarterback. Like a year. So, you know, in the post game, you know, the response or the position by Jeff Scott and the rest of the offense, and Dabo included, was what made you think we couldn't block these guys? We have to block our defensive line every day in practice. So of course
we saw you trying to block them last year. But
exactly.
Here's the difference, though. I remember going down on the field at the end of that Sugar Bowl, because the game was well in hand and my story was already written, and talking to some people who'd been on the field the whole time, and they were saying that they'd never seen Dabo so mad on the sidelines. And like, there'd be times when Kelly Bryant would come off and Dabo would be yelling, "Throw the ball." And so it may be that the offensive line didn't have as many struggles as we thought against Alabama. It's just that the ball wasn't getting out as fast as it needed to. And you notice the national championship game, that was not an issue. The ball got out very quickly.
That's a great point, Andy, because, you know, when you see a sack or a strip sack, you know, you just say, oh, the line didn't protect. But thinking back to the game 10 days ago, it wasn't like they had to protect for very long. Those weren't slow developing plays. And similar against Notre Dame in the Cotton Bowl, you know, Clemson's offensive line, I think, allowed 3 sacks in that game. But when Trevor Lawrence did strike to Justin Ross and T. Higgins and others down the field, it didn't take very long.
They're not having to protect for 4 seconds. They're having to protect for 2 seconds. It's basically Justin Ross, you know, runs 10 yards and comes out of his break and catches the ball. You know, these are not, for the most part, 50-yard through the air touchdown passes. They're 25 yards through the air, and then the guy is catching it clean and running the rest of the way. Or it's their, you know, they need to score from 25 yards out. You know, if you go back to the Alabama Oklahoma Orange Bowl, like, there's a Kyler Murray throw where it's 49 yards in the air. Well, you can only do that if you have enough time for your receiver to go 49 yards. And so you watch, and Kyler Murray had to, you know, do a Houdini escape to do that. Trevor Lawrence never had to do that. They were never in the position where they're trying to throw it 50 yards in the air.
You know, as much as we try to break this down into scientific terms and all these different nuances of this matchup, how much of it is just simple human nature, in that 2 years ago, Clemson had spent 364 or whatever days stewing over what happened in Glendale when they came up short against Alabama. Last year, Alabama had spent 360 whatever days stewing over what happened against Clemson in Tampa. Is it? And I remember in the aftermath of that game last year, Clemson's players saying, you know what, we did not have the right frame of mind. They spent December patting themselves on the back after destroying Miami for the ACC championship. Meanwhile, Alabama is sitting in its hotel rooms, not going to Bourbon Street, not doing any of the social events, but stewing over the notion that the torch was about to be passed to Clemson. Yeah. And similar, I mean, obviously different matchups this year and different reasons that Clemson just destroyed them. But how much of it to you just comes down to simple human nature and motivation, or lack thereof?
If this were a normal team that they played, not Alabama, I'd say maybe. But Alabama doesn't work that way. That's not how they operate. They don't think that way. They only play against their own standard, which Clemson is starting to do as well. So I don't think it was that bad at all. I think it was Clemson beat them a year earlier in some individual recruiting matchups, and it made all the difference. I don't think there was any difference in motivation for this game. I don't really think there was that much of a difference in motivation for the Sugar Bowl. The difference was they had Trevor Lawrence and Justin Ross. They didn't have them before. And, you know, Justin Ross is kind of the prime example. He's from Alabama. Alabama wanted him. Clemson coaches, when they came to him, said, "You can be the one who tips the balance." And he did. they were singling him up on the corners that they thought were the weakest. And they were winning one-on-one matchups. And that's what NFL teams do. They find the weak link and they attack it. That's exactly what Clemson did. And this was more a recruiting victory than anything else. And here's the thing. Don't let the score get it twisted. Alabama wasn't that much better than Clemson in the when they played in the Sugar Bowl. Clemson wasn't that much better than Alabama this year. You know, with this past game, Alabama did all, you know, we always make fun of teams that are down and they punt and they try to kick field goals. And we're like, why don't they try to score touchdowns? Because they're down. Well, Alabama did try to score touchdowns. The problem is when you don't, when it doesn't work, it snowballs and you get hammered. So that's what happened. Alabama's not that much worse than Clemson. And just like Clemson wasn't that much worse than Alabama a year earlier, it kind of snowballed on them. But I do think in this case, it was just beating them for a recruit or two made the difference.
Agreed. But on the other side of the ball, I would submit that the presence of Christian Wilkins, Cleveland Farrell, Austin Bryant, they came back for that.
Mm-hmm.
In the context of Clemson's defense, somehow holding that freaking offense, that collection of absolute freaks to 16 points, the intangibles or the motivation or whatever, I think it did show up in that case.
Well, and Tua played one of his worst games too. And that a lot has to do with the defense. They made him impatient, which he hadn't been an impatient quarterback all year. And he got impatient. The out was just slightly bad throw combined with really good defensive play. So that's the first pick six. But the second interception was, I got to make something happen, so I'm just going to throw this. And Tua hadn't thrown a throw like that all year. And I think a lot of that was the defense frustrating him. And so, but you're right. I mean, if those three guys don't come back, I don't think you get this result. As good as the young guys Clemson has are, and they will be really good in the coming years, you would not have gotten that same sort of game out of that bunch.
Both of those picks, though, sort of the looking deeper into how they happen, just an amazing job of scheming by Brent Venables. I remember the day of the game, Tim Tebow that morning was on ESPN, and they asked him about the matchup, and he says, listen, I had to face Oklahoma and Brent Venables in 2008, you know, with that Florida juggernaut. Mm-hmm. He said, we spent the entire first half trying to figure what the heck he was doing. He was throwing stuff at us that we had never seen before, and it took us till halftime for us to get our bearings.
Yeah.
and to calm down. I mean, they held that Florida offense at 24 points. You know, that was a nail biter. And that started my wheels turning. And in hindsight, you know, not that picking a game really matters, but you do want to have a good feel for the game, you know, and the matchup.
Right.
And you want to be right in that.
Oh, in terms
context of
defensive play calling, there was a mismatch there. And you saw the news this week, which wasn't all that surprising, but you see how there was a mismatch. Tosh Lapoy leaving Alabama, where he was defensive coordinator, to be the D-line coach for the Cleveland Browns. Now, do you think that was what he planned to do going into that last game?
Yeah, and not to get too X and O heavy here, but on those two picks, when you go back and watch, Tua, before the snap, thinks it's man coverage in both cases, right? So,
right.
And then the ball is snapped. The first thing he sees is Isaiah Simmons screaming at him from the field side. And
if you've never seen Isaiah Simmons up close, that's a terrifying sight.
Yes. So Kayvon Wallace goes and sort of replaces Simmons over the slot, mm-hmm. but they're in zone. AJ Terrell is over Devontae Smith, I believe it was. I'm sorry. Wallace was over Judy. And Judy was the intended target on what should, what against man
that should work.
Would have been an easy throw, because there's no way that Kayvon Wallace is going to close the space with Judy. Judy has that leverage. But the key part of that was A.J. Terrell, he's in zone. His eyes are on the quarterback's eyes. Instead of, if he's in man, his eyes are on Devontae Smith. And so that's an easy
pick. And if Tua, recognizes zone, he'll hold the safety with his eyes.
Yes.
And and then throw before he really even looks over. That's what he on. If you're, if you watch the game where they beat Georgia for the national championship, the last play is him holding the safety.
Yes.
If he doesn't hold the safety with his eyes, that's not a touchdown. It's maybe not even first down.
Yes. Second pick in the second quarter. Again, Kayvon Wallace, sort of in like a false key, I guess you could say, goes over to the hash over the slot receiver, over Judy. Again, that's the matchup that we all talked about, you know?
Yep.
Alabama's slot receivers against Clemson's safeties. We saw it, of course, in the first quarter. I
mean, and if you watch Alabama's offense all year, that is – so that's who they're reading on a lot of those RPOs they love.
Yes.
That's what they call the conflict player.
Yes.
So if you make a false conflict player, or if you have him doing things to – like if Brent Venables knows you're going to do X when the conflict player does Y – he's going to have the conflict player do Y because he knows what that will make you do, and then everybody else will adjust.
Yes. And so post-snap, Wallace, in actuality, drifts back over to the middle. They're in zone. They're in a cloud coverage, I guess a three deep. And Trayvon Mullen, who is on the outside receiver, I think it was the tight end. I think it was Irv Smith. Mm-hmm. Instead of being in man coverage on Irv Smith on an underneath route, he's dropping. And so ordinarily that would have just been an overthrown ball to Judy.
Yeah.
But Mullen was in the vicinity. And so I'm not convinced that, oh God, those were two stupid throws by Tua. I just don't think he knew.
The first one definitely wasn't. The second one did look like he was trying to force something.
Yeah.
Because he would have seen all those guys back there.
Yes. So, anyway, Venables, after the game, obviously before the game, he was talking up Alabama's offense like they were one of the best offenses ever. And his post-game assessment echoed that. He said that that was the best offense he'd ever schemed against, slightly better than 2004 Southern Cal with Matt Leinart and Reggie Bush and Lindale White and Dwayne Jarrett. Goodness.
Now, remember, offenses were much less creative then.
Yes.
But that one had all the weapons.
What do you think about this Alabama offense?
Oh, I think it's fantastic.
Yeah.
They did so many things that made them impossible to defend unless you had the kind of athletes Clemson had. That's why you saw Clemson and Georgia and Mississippi State were the only defenses that could really do anything with them because they had that level of athlete. Nobody else had a chance.
Yeah. Clemson fans, some of them. One of the common things I heard 2 years ago after they won it was, yeah, I thought that Alabama defense was the best ever. Yeah, right. And then after this one, yeah, I thought that Alabama offense was one of the best ever. Yeah, right. Well, yeah. And doesn't that
it was. Make you look better? It's a great defense.
Doesn't that magnify the impressiveness of Clemson's accomplishment?
Yes, don't diminish the accomplishments of your own defense by saying Alabama was overrated. They were properly rated, and Clemson played an incredible game.
All right, another little anecdote of me sort of wishing I would have picked up on something was you were in the vicinity on media day. I was talking to Jeff Scott, and as reporters do, you're sort of lurking, waiting on him to get done so you can get some of the good stuff after he's done with everybody else. And I think it was you and your
which is funny, 'cause I didn't really get to talk to him much.
It was,
I think I said hi and bye 'cause the time ended.
Well, I think it was you and your colleague, Ross Dellinger.
Ross Dellinger, yeah.
Who does a fantastic job, has written, over the month of December, did several just fantastic stories on Clemson, really, really in-depth stuff. But I think he was waiting around. I think you were hanging out. And so I said, Jeff, I wanted to know about the corners. And I said, just between us, I'm just curious, are these the best corners you have faced this year? And the smirk on his face.
Yeah, no. The answer is no.
Spoke volumes. I did not pay enough attention to that smirk before he went on and started talking about, oh, yeah, it's just your typical Alabama corners. They're tall and physical, really athletic. It's going to be a great challenge, blah, 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 blah. And so then I think you introduced Ross to Jeff after that, and then you guys walked off. Well, in the locker room after the game, I went up to Jeff, and I said, Jeff, I said, your smirk spoke volumes, and I can't believe I didn't read more into that. And he said, yeah, there was another reporter standing there, so I didn't want to say too much. But they were that confident going into that game.
That's something that had been exposed throughout the year. I mean, like, against a typical Alabama secondary, Arkansas doesn't do what they do. You know, there were some issues that got exposed that – now, you had to have as many weapons to throw to as Clemson does, because Alabama had enough in the secondary that if you only had one or two good players, they're going to shut them down. But if you got five, they didn't have enough.
All right, Andy, let's get into – okay, you were assigned the cover story either way, regardless of – so you had to have – a cover story, two cover stories prepared, essentially, like the building blocks of each going in. Can you enlighten the listeners on how that works and how you go about building that going in?
So you get about 3,000 words for that story. And we close on Monday nights. The magazine gets closed on Monday nights. Typically, the off-the-floor deadline is like 7 p.m. So they push the off-the-floor deadline to something like 4 or 5 or 6 a.m. for those national championship games, the college football one, the college basketball one, you know, if the World Series ends on a Monday, if the NBA Finals ends on a Monday, that sort of thing. And it is it's interesting because you've got to write the middle and have it locked in before the game starts. So for Clemson, I wrote we call it a pre-file. My Clemson pre-file was way too long, and we ended up having to cut a bunch of it because I wanted more room to write new stuff off the game. I think I filed 2,400 words. We ended up running about 2,100 of the pre-file. And that gives me 900 to play with at the end of the game. And you can distribute it however you want. I kind of like to do it evenly, 450 and 450. But it just depends on what you've got and how it fits within the story. And then I had an Alabama one, and the Alabama one was a little tougher because you've basically written the same story 5 years in a row, and it becomes very hard to find the new. This one was, you know, a little more heavy on Tua and the offense and how that had evolved and how they dealt with the staff attrition and all that sort of thing. But the Clemson one, I didn't write the cover story when Clemson won 2 years ago. Brian Hamilton had Clemson and I had Alabama. So the good news was I knew what Brian had written, but I hadn't written it. It was not my quote. So there was stuff going back 10 years that I had with Clemson that I could draw from because I hadn't used it. So like, if you asked when I started working on that story, I started working on it in 2008 when I did a story on Jeff Scott and Mike Dooley getting kind of, for lack of a better term, battlefield promotions from GA to full-time assistant after Dabo got the interim job. So, I mean, that story was kind of over 10 years in the making.
Proud sponsor of the Dubcast is the Abernathy Boutique Hotel. A short Trevor Lawrence throw from Death Valley. Man, it is a favorite for the ESPN folks who come into town, who stay there various times of the year. Also, man, it is booked up and packed to the gills for home football weekends. It has really caught on for people who want to come in and stay. Also, Taps Bar and Cafe, a really cool spot to go hang out during the week. If you want to grab a drink with some friends, some of you professors out there who want to wind down after work, laid-back alternative to some of the more boisterous college bars in downtown Clemson. So go check them out if you already haven't. Got some really good beers on tap, including my favorite, the Hugie Street IPA. So check them out online at theabernathy.com. So, okay, let's go back to after the game. This is probably 2 hours after the game, after all the press conferences, all the locker rooms emptied out. Almost all the writers are back up in the press
My deadline box. Had passed at this point, by the way.
Okay, so, all right.
But I knew I had more time. Like, they lie to you. They tell you we need it by 2 a.m. Eastern. Like, no, you don't. You have till 5.
Okay, so it's me, you, and Max Olson of The Athletic hanging out outside Clemson's locker room. Almost all of the Clemson players and coaches have filed out, and they're on the buses. And we're waiting on Dabo, who has been known to take a while to get done talking to people. And
there were no recruits there, so I figured it'd be a little shorter.
Yeah. So, and you're looking at your watch the whole time. And what time was it? This was like 10:30 Pacific.
Yeah. So my deadline was 11 Pacific, 2 a.m. Eastern. This was about. I want to say I got Dabo at like 10:52.
Wow. So yeah, I read your story. So okay, just for the listeners, we're trying to wait him out, and we're standing there for what, like 40 minutes maybe?
Yeah.
And no sign of him. So he was
now, I don't know if you noticed, I grabbed my phone and it looked like I was playing on my phone. I was actually writing the top news section for my story. I came up with a lead while we were standing there. What started with a prank call ended with a wet willy. Because I had seen the video of Christian Wilkins giving him a wet willy, and I watched it over and over. I'm like, this is it. Cause I had written about the D line coming back. And, one of the things with Christian Wilkins about his career at Clemson, he prank called Dabo when he committed, he prank called Dabo when he said he was coming back.
Yep.
Basically when he came back, he said, he started off like, I've loved my time there. It's been so odd. He goes on for like a minute. So Dabo assumes he's going to say, I'm leaving for the NFL. And Christian goes, and that's why I'm coming back. So that was sort of the beginning of this team. Christian Wilkins is coming back. That means all three of those guys are coming back. And I thought the perfect ending of that was Christian Wilkins giving him a wet willy on the stage on national television. And so I decided that was going to be the lead. And so while you and I and Max were standing there, I wrote that top 450 words.
Are you nervous during that time?
No. I was nervous. The first time I did it, when Florida State beat Auburn, I was very nervous because I'd never done it before. But, I mean, you and I both used to work for newspapers. You know, getting that gamer in off – well, I don't know if you ever had to do – I'm sure you did because I think the ACC contract had a few of these. If you've ever had to write a newspaper game story off a 9 p.m. Eastern start for an East Coast newspaper – there is no deadline situation you can't handle.
All right. So what is your explanation? Just in layman's terms, why are we standing there? We're waiting around just for an anecdote, right?
Because we want the thing that nobody else has.
Yes.
Exclusivity.
Yes. Okay.
Now, so, if we all three had been standing there, we would not have been exclusive.
Yes. So Max leaves, and then I leave. And you waited. You waited him out. How much longer did you have?
I was about to quit. He came out like 5 minutes later. Oh. So I wasn't feeling too bad about it. But the thing was, I wasn't that worried because I had something to send them. I knew if I sent them the top, they weren't going to be upset that I hadn't sent them the bottom yet. So if I hadn't gotten anything done, I probably would have bailed.
So what I'm thinking, I go to the media shuttle and I open up my computer and start working. I'm like, wait a minute. I could have sat down right there outside that locker room and started working just like you were.
Yep. Exactly.
So, all right. And I wasn't necessarily, I mean, you obviously had more pressing needs than I did. I just felt like I need to be here just to be witness to the aftermath of this. Just, you know, just in case you know, something interesting happens. You just want to be around the moment, you know, when it's happening.
Cause you never know what you're going to see. Like the first time I did it, I waited out the whole Florida State team, and there was a great scene where Telvin Smith and I'm blanking on it, Tim Jernigan, Telvin Smith. And I'm pretty sure that's who it was. Telvin Smith and Tim Jernigan come out of the locker room, and the game was at the Rose Bowl, and they come out holding a pair of scissors, and they're clipping the pieces of the grass that they're going to take to FSU Sod Center. And sometimes you just get lucky. My pre-file started with Jimbo Fisher begging for money at the Ocala Hilton during a booster meeting right after he's gotten the head coaching job. And right before he did that, he and I sat there and talked, and he was going over the class he just signed. He said, "Listen, some of these guys, they're going to make this place special." And like Talman Smith was one of the guys. And so it was the perfect beginning. In this one, I knew I needed something from Dabo to wrap everything up.
Okay. And so you wrapped everything up by quoting him saying, "To be successful, you have to have a vision for what you want to do and a clear plan," Sweeney said as he walked to the team bus after the championship victory. "And then you can't be afraid to fail. You've got to keep getting up. That's what we've done for 10 years," end quote. And then you closed it. Then he walked on, planning already for the next 10. That's fantastic.
Well, and so that tied in with the pre-file. So you had your 450 words about wet willies and whatnot. The part I had already said in before the game starts with Dabo calling his wife in 2008 after he's been named the interim. And he gave all of us this quote at some point during the year. And it's still my favorite quote that I've ever run in a story where, you know, Terry Don Phillips comes into the staff room and all of Tommy Bowden's staff is sitting there, sans Tommy. And Terry Don says, "Dabo, you're in charge. See me in my office in 5 minutes," and walks out. And in that 5 minutes, Dabo calls Kathleen and goes, "Bad news. We just got fired and it gets worse. I'm the interim." I mean, those are the words that started the dynasty right there.
And
I used those in a story earlier, but I had to bring it back. And then the thing I did to add to it was I called Kathleen Sweeney. I said, what was your response on the other end of that phone call?" And so she helped flesh that out. And the story was a lot about how, you know, we hone in on Dabo's goofball tendencies and the fun stuff. But one of the big reasons they are where they are now is he's made some pretty cutthroat decisions along the way. And he's been pretty good at it. You know, he fires Rob Spence immediately when he gets the interim job necessary. Probably the hardest one he had to do was firing Billy Napier after that 2010 season. But that saved everybody else's job. Then he fires Kevin Steele. Then he benches Kelly Bryant. Those are all very hard decisions that he got right.
And the most powerful part of that phone call to me was the "and it gets worse" part.
And you know, with Dabo, you never quite know how much the story has improved over the years. But I got a feeling that's how it went.
He's got a great memory, so it could all be exactly
I watched that video where he was taking you around to like every exact spot. So I'm sure he remembers that verbatim.
Okay, so he comes out of the locker room, you're standing there, nobody else is around. I'm guessing he's with Kathleen and Tracy. Anybody else?
Kathleen, I think, was already on the bus.
Okay.
I forget who he was with. He was with some of the ops guys. Not Mike Dooley, because I had talked to him earlier. I can't remember exactly who. It was only like two people. And he was in a hurry. He needed to go. But it was one of those things where, you know, he knows me and he's like, "Okay, I will humor you for the next 45 seconds. And that's all it took.
Wow. And he had just done confetti angels out on the field with Kathleen and the family, I guess maybe a half hour, 45 minutes earlier, which I'm guessing Nick Saban has probably never done that.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Dabo is back in work mode already at that point. Mm. like I could get the sense like he's done with this. Let's get back, because he's fun. He's funny. He's still a football coach. Mm-hmm. People forget that.
And that's the contrast between that and the reaction 2 years ago is almost startling. I mean, he was in cold blood killer mode at this point, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, he realizes he is on the precipice of something truly amazing, but he also realizes how hard it is, because think of all the stuff, you know, all that Nick Saban's accomplished. He couldn't do it this year.
Sean Allen.
And that's what Dabo probably more than anybody appreciates what Nick Saban's done. So Dabo understands how hard what comes next is, because now they're supposed to ascend and be the dynasty. And it's not easy. There's a reason nobody ever does it. There's a reason we keep staring in awe at what Alabama's done the last 10 years. It doesn't happen. They have a chance to do it, but there's a lot of steps between now and pulling that off.
I was talking with Sean Alexander on Media Day 2 days before the game, the fantastic former Alabama running back who was there when Dabo was there, and just asking him some of his perceptions and thoughts on Dabo, and he says, yeah, you know, Dabo and I have one pretty striking similarity. We both have a big smile on our faces as we slit your throat.
Oh, my God. I wish I had that quote for my story. That would have been perfect.
And
That would have been perfect for that story.
Almost goosebump inducing, in hindsight in particular. You know?
Yeah.
When you consider...
That's what I've been saying about the guy for years. I haven't put it that well. That's exactly the way to put it.
It was, yeah. He was, I don't want to say edgy after they won it. He just had an edge about him, you know?
Well, and here's the thing. And this is what Kathleen kind of got across to me. Like when he called her about the interim thing, she was sad, but for Tommy Bowden and his mm-hmm. family.
Amazing, amazing story. And I know you are thankful that you've been able to be around it for you know, since the beginning when you did that.
Well, it's interesting because it's kind of the first big story I started covering for SI, because that was my first year. 2008 was my first year. So Clemson was supposed to win the ACC, and it was a disaster. And then they made the receivers coach the interim. So that was the first really interesting story I got to cover for SI.
You've been around Nick Saban as well. I recall, I guess it was the week of the Johnny Manziel game in 2012. You were able to accompany him to his radio show. Is that right?
I was the guest host on the radio show. They have a media guest host every every Thursday for the radio show. So, and they, you know, we'd set that up months in advance. It had nothing to do with who they were playing. I actually did not plan to cover the game when I set it up. I was going to be there Thursday and then head out to another game. And then as Texas A&M started playing better, we decided to just stay there for that game. But he knew what was going to happen. He knew exactly what was going to happen. And basically I shake his hand at the end of the show and I say, good luck on Saturday. He goes, yeah, we're going to need it.
Mm.
He had spent the previous hour telling the listeners of his radio show, this guy's going to tear us apart. We don't have anything to deal with him.
Okay, so that was a period of reckoning for him. It led him to start adapting his defensive players to get more speed on the field, not as many big 360-pounders. It also, I'm guessing, caused him to adjust his thinking on offense and you know, doing more spread stuff. Fast-forwarding to 10 days ago, he said... And this is just so interesting. He said, and he even said it in the pregame interview with Maria Taylor. You know, Trevor Lawrence is a great quarterback, and I'm worried about our defensive backs' ability to edge off those great receivers they have. And then he said after the game, I was worried going in. That's something that just really bothered me that I couldn't shake, was covering those guys. Okay, so
because it's something he couldn't fix.
Right.
There's no scheme that would have fixed it. It is a recruiting issue, and the problem is when you get beat in a recruiting situation, you can't fix it right now. You can't fix it at practice, and so it probably drove him crazy because he knew that when they didn't get Justin Ross last February, and then, you know, you can just expand that out, T. Higgins, those types of players, or expand it out to their corner recruiting. He knew when they didn't get exactly who they wanted that they had no answer. So it would have been up to Clemson to screw it up at that point, and they didn't.
Okay. His assistant coaches are once again a turnstile this offseason. Is this a huge deal, and where does he go from here? This is obviously another period of reckoning for him, just like back in 2012.
Yeah, he's running out of people who know the system and who know how they operate. So who does he hire? Like, okay, so Tosh LePoy's leaving. Do you call Todd Grantham at Florida? And if you're Todd Grantham, do you go?
Wow.
Why wouldn't you just stay at Florida? So that's the issue is, you know, and when I say Grantham, I said Grantham because I know he's worked with Saban. One of the few people, you know, Kevin Steele's worked with him, but he's Auburn's defensive coordinator. You can't hire Auburn's defensive coordinator if you're Alabama, right? Would that happen? So, yeah, this is a very interesting time because he's been so successful that schools have probably overhired his assistants, and the people he would want for these jobs all have better jobs now. They're not coming. And it'll be interesting to see how he adjusts to that. Meanwhile, on the other side, you got Clemson where, listen, Tony Elliott's going to be a great head coach. Jeff Scott's going to be a great head coach. Brent Venables could be a head coach if he wants to, but, you know, I'm not sure he does. They've got younger assistants that are going to be head coaches someday. But they're not in a hurry to leave. You know, and look, if I'm Tony Elliott, I wait for the perfect job. Why would I leave unless I get the perfect job? What's better than making almost $1 billion to work at a place where you're happy? You know, you could get $3.5 million somewhere else as a head coach, but you may lose and get fired 3 years later, and then Clemson's already got somebody else, and you can't get that back. So you don't leave unless it's perfect. And that's another part of what Dabo Swinney has done well, is create an environment that nobody wants to leave. Alabama is not like that. It is not an environment that no one wants to leave. It's an environment where people will tell you they learned a ton, but they didn't have the most pleasant time learning it.
And it's interesting that 2012 nightmare against Johnny Manziel didn't cost them a championship. They still won their second straight, but tore apart Notre Dame. So this one, on the other hand, much different animal, it seems like.
Yeah, and the other part that people are discounting because of the way that game ended is Georgia ain't going anywhere. Georgia's only going to get better. Georgia's going to be a problem for them in the SEC because Kirby has taken the blueprint and gone to a place where there's even more players. And he seems to be recreating the blueprint pretty well. Now he's got some of the same issues. He lost both his coordinators this year. One became a head coach, one left for Tennessee, but he seems to have things going, and look, they're going to break through at some point. So if you're Nick Saban, you understand it's harder because of trying to find the assistance that you need to fill your staff. You've got Clemson building what it's building. You've got Georgia building what it's building. And then you also have Jimbo Fisher and College Station copying your blueprint there. And LSU's pretty good.
It's interesting the upheaval in the assistant coaching ranks compared to the placid nature of Dabo Swinney's offices.
Well, and so... There's another coach now who I'm seeing and noticing that his assistants do not seem to be wanting to leave unless it's a perfect situation. Ed Orgeron seems to be doing, trying to do the same thing to create an environment where assistants don't want to leave. And don't, and I know for certain that's been discussed in LSU's offices. How do we make this a place where good people don't want to leave?
The Dabo blueprint.
Yep. Yep. Everybody's copying Nick. Now everybody's going to copy Dabo.
Yeah. Let's see. A couple days.
Harder to do either one.
Yeah.
Not easy to do either one.
I was on a radio. It was with Childers on the SEC channel the day after the game. And Childers said, "Hey, my theory is this is a great day for the SEC because this Clemson showed that it can be done." And I'm like, "Yeah, all you have to do is recruit one of the best quarterbacks in history,
the very best players, the very best quarterback." Have some of the very best assistant coaches. Yeah, it's super easy.
Simple recipe. Yeah. Back to the assistant thing right quick. A couple days before the ACC championship game, Jeff Scott gets approached by Jeremy Pruitt to run his own show in Knoxville. Jeff says, no thanks. Month and a half later, Georgia, Jim Chaney goes for $1.5 million. Jeff's making, I guess, $850. So, yeah, that just... it really underscores just what you're talking about with that making it so attractive for them to stay, not just with a paycheck, but with the culture and all that.
Yeah. And it has to be perfect where you don't leave, because why would you leave happy and wealthy? Happy and wealthy is a great thing to be.
Andy Staples, you have a show to prepare for. You've given us way more time than we deserve, but a really, really awesome conversation. Great story behind the scenes and all that. Really enjoyed talking about that, and I know that my listeners will enjoy hearing about it.
Well, thank you, Larry. I appreciate it, and thank you for being my my Sherpa for all things Clemson for 10 years now.
You don't need my help. Take care. All right. Thanks to Andy Staples for helping us revive this this machine that had to get a little jump start there after some time off. Really appreciate our sponsors, without which this would not be possible. Title sponsor, Parham Smith and Arch and Hold Law Firm in downtown Greenville, the producers of the Dubcast koozies you might have seen around. Also, Tandem Payment in Greenville, another one of our sponsors. And then last but not least, the Abernathy Boutique Hotel in Clemson. Most of all, thanks to all y'all for making this a part of your routine. 75,000 downloads across the season from August to now. So, hey, not too bad. Also, shout out to our listener in Egypt. We have a download from there. Also, another download in Thailand. So, appreciate y'all helping us go worldwide into some far-flung locales. Okay, I'm going to stop talking. I sound like an idiot. Next podcast should be dropped sometime next week. So stay tuned, and everybody have a wonderful weekend. Cheers.